Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Punaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavatitamastu Mavishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
One verse 38.
Ajnanam avritischarte. Ajnanam avritischarte. Vikshepat prak prasidyatah. Vikshepat prak prasidyatah. Yajapyatapyavastete. Yajapyatapyavastete. Vikshepasyavanatmanah. Vikshepasyavanatmanah.
Sandhi. Ajnanam avritihi. Cha ete vikshepat prak prasidhyatah yadi api atha api avaste te vikshepasya eva na atmanah.
This is a technical argument, interesting argument that Vidyaranya is bringing in here. This is the situation. Up to this point, he's been dealing first with giving the tenth man story in detail, and then taking the tenth man's story and all of the things that Ajnanam, Avarna, Vikshepa, all of these things that he had brought out in the tenth man's story, bringing them over, bringing all of those avastas, he calls them, all of those situations over into our situation that has to do with self, the situation of self-ignorance. And so these are, I think, the seven avastas or conditions that he is looking at. The first one is Ajnanam, which is ignorance. So self-ignorance. Okay, so ajnanam, ajnanam means ignorance, but now it's in reference to self-ignorance. Avritti and vikshepa are the two conditions of self-ignorance. If ignorance is there, then that brings about avritti, which is a covering. Like, for instance, if you're ignorant of the rope, right, then the ropeness of the rope is covered, and that causes a vikshepa, a projection, which would be the snake. Okay, so ajnanam brings about by its nature, it has these two conditions, avritti, which is covering, and then vikshepa, which is projection. Then with those three, these three need to be removed. First by paroksha jnanam, which is indirect knowledge, and then aparoksha jnanam, which is direct knowledge. These are just the terms he's been using. Then there's five. Then the removal of this ajnanam through the indirect and then direct knowledge brings about the shoka moksha, the liberation from sorrow, and the tripti nirankusha, which is that unfettered fullness. So these stages, the first three are what is the cause for bondage, right? The ajnanam, which then brings about that covering and then the projection. Like the covering would be, this would be an example of it. The ajnanam, he says like this. Person who has ajnanam, they don't even know that they have ajnanam. They have ignorance. That ignorance is so steep, so deep, that you don't even know you're ignorant. And so there is no question. And here I am working, I've been born, and I'm living here in this world, and I am this is who I am. I'm a kartha. I'm a doer and an enjoyer, you know, and I live here. That's what it is. This is who I am. I'm born and I'll die, period. That's pure ajnanam. The question hasn't even arisen. Then what we call the avritti is, if there's been any type of questioning, this is how Vidyaranya deals with it anyway. Sometimes we deal a little differently. This is how Vidyaranya deals with it. If there's a question, like somebody were to come and ask you and say, well, who are you? Who are you? What is your nature? What do you mean, what is my nature? I am this. The self, if you were to go into inquire into who you are, see, Ajnana, there's not even any inquiry. So when we're talking about the Avruti, if you were to inquire about who you are, then there is no knowledge whatsoever at all about the nature. The nature of yourself is completely hidden. That this self, the limitless being that you are, who that self, its nature is completely hidden. Even though you experience yourself as an existent being, that it's the limitless substrate reality of this creation, that I, in fact, am one with Ishvara, that I am the truth of the creation, in fact. There is no such knowledge at all. And so the nature of yourself upon inquiry is completely covered, right? That's the avriti. The vikshepa is when that avriti, that covering is there, then you have to take yourself to be something, right? Because you are here, and if you don't know who you are, then you will take yourself to be something. That's the projection, that's the vikshepa. And so then you take yourself to be what seems to enjoy consciousness, right? Because I am a conscious being, that is itself self-evident. That I am a conscious, existent being is self-evident to whether you have self-knowledge or not. We can all agree that, yes, I'm a conscious, existent being. The nature of that conscious, existent being is not self-evident. But that I am, and that I am conscious, that is self-evident. Now, this body seems to be conscious, so I am the body. The mind is conscious, so then I am the mind. Sense organs conscious, so I am the body-mind-sense organs complex. That's who I am. I am this person here that has sense organs and a mind. That is the vikshepa, right? That's where the samsara comes in. Then I became a knower and an enjoyer and a person with limitations. That's the vikshepa. Okay. So these three, the ajnanam, avarana, and vikshepa, these three are the cause of bondage. Right? And all of it has its roots in ignorance. Right? So the avarna, the covering, and the vikshepa, that is rooted in ajnanam, in ignorance. So this is the cause of bondage. So now, what is going to liberate a person from ignorance, which is the cause of bondage, is knowledge. Right? So what's the solution to ignorance? It's knowledge. It's nothing else. You can do lots of things to get yourself into position to gain knowledge, but to remove the ignorance, you have to gain the knowledge, right? Because ignorance and knowledge go together. Right? No amount of action is going to remove ignorance. You can do lots of action in ignorance; it doesn't make any, doesn't hurt it at all. Right? To remove the ignorance, you can't wash it away. Right? To remove the ignorance, you have to gain knowledge. So, what is the cause for moksha then is knowledge. So they give two. The first is paroksha jnanam, means indirect knowledge. And now Vidyaranya looks at this, is with indirect knowledge, this avarna, the covering, is taken away, because he looks at it in this way. There's the pure ignorance where there's an example of pure ignorance is you're walking by the rope. Two boys are walking by the rope, right? And it's really at dusk. And that rope is there. They walk by it, and they don't see it. They don't see the rope. No problem. And that is the situation of a samsari who's not a mumukshu. For them, there's lots of problems in the world, but I can solve it. In other words, I am this person in the world, and I just have to make it right. I have to make it work. I have to do the right things, learn the right things, have the right family, all of these type of things, and then I will have a happy life. I'll have a happy life. So I can still succeed, and all of this is fine. This is what it is. There's no rope, I don't see the problem at all. Okay, so now, say that I inquire into who I am. The inquiry then, that conscious inquiry of who I am, if that avritti is still there, the conscious inquiry just ends me up in kind of a samsaric loop, where I'm just identifying myself then with another object in samsara. I am this body, or I'm a soul that goes to heaven. I'm something still that exists within time and change. Now, paroksha jnanam, how he looks at paroksha jnanam, indirect knowledge, is when somebody trustworthy comes along and says to you, there does exist the nature of yourself, there does exist a self which is free from time and limitless. Or just simply comes and says, it's still indirect knowledge. But what that indirect knowledge does, if it's from a trustworthy source, is now make you know that there is such a thing as a limitless self. Just on, because trustworthy knowledge, like if you were to read a book of chemistry and then all of a sudden, oh, you realize there is this periodic table. Isn't that interesting? But you didn't even know about it before. Now you know about it. It's from a trustworthy source. You can learn about it and understand it. And it provides some relief. So here what they look at in terms of the avarana is in this, na asti na pati. Na asti means there is no self. It is not. Your being, this limitless being, there is no such thing. It is not. Nabhati means it isn't known to me. I don't experience it. So the person who has this avarna vikshepa for the avarna, they have, it's twofold. One is there is no such self. Na asti, it is not. The other part is I know of no such self. I have no such experience. I have never seen it. There is no such, in my opinion, there's no such self. And if there is, I've never seen it. How about that? My opinion, no such self. If there is, I've certainly never experienced it and don't know anything about it. The paroksha jnanam is, there is a self. Right? Because trustworthy source comes along and says, there is a self. Say, oh, there is such a self, oh. Okay, tell me. It's like in the 10th man story where the old man comes and tells the 10th man who's searching for the 10th man. He says, don't worry, I'll show you the 10th man. He's alive. Everything's fine. The boy goes, okay, that's wonderful news. Please make me see him. Show him to me. Right? But that the 10th man is now known by the trustworthy source. So say the Upanishads come along or the teacher comes along and says, yourself is changeless and infinite. Yourself, the truth of yourself is the truth of the Lord. Or the nature, the happiness that all of these kind of statements, the happiness that you seek is your own self. Okay? The happiness that you seek, the wholeness that you seek, is to be found in your own self. And it's a trustworthy source, and you say, this is great. This is what I want to know. That's paroksha jnanam. So the na asti is now not there. You see what I mean? Now I say, oh, it is. But now the problem is, it is, but I don't know it. Right? It is, but I don't know it. Now this bhati has to take place because it's still, now it's asti, but asti it is, but na bhati. Na bhati means it's not, I don't know, so please show me. So that's the aparoksha jnanam. The aparoksha jnanam is when the old man or the old sadhu counts out the other 9 boys and then points to the 10th man and says, you are the 10th man. Now, the 10th man that the old man has promised is recognized as the 10th, by the 10th man, as I am the 10th man. See that? It's much different. It's a much different knowledge. Though the 10th man would be very consoling to the 10th man who's searching for the 10th man. It's very consoling. But it's not consoling enough to solve the problem, right? The problem is solved when the old man has counted out the other 9 boys, so there's no other options left. And the 10th man is now united, with the boy who is already self-evident. See how that boy standing there is self-evident as a boy who's standing there. That boy would say, I am a boy, I am the leader of this group, I'm the Boy Scout leader of this group of boys. I am this boy who is standing here. He would say that. But that's not good enough. He has to be able to say, I, this boy who I'm standing here, am the 10th man. He has to say that. Right? So the 10th man has to join the boy experience. You see? So here it's like that. The self, the infinite nature of myself, is appreciated as, oh, I'm happy that there is such a thing, but I need to realize it. The aparoksha jnanam requires the whole teaching methodology to take the student step by step by step by step by step to be able to say, I am that self. This one, this me that is me, the silent one sitting here present to all experience, this very silent being, simple being, it is this me that is Brahman. It is this me that is the infinite self, that is the self of all beings. That needs to be directly, immediately recognized. And that is moksha, because then otherwise it's a belief. And it can be a strong belief, it's a faith. I have faith that myself, right, is infinite and is the self of all beings and is the self of the Lord, that my innermost self is the self of all beings, is the self of this creation, is the self of the Lord. I believe that, I have faith in that. That's my religion. Well, and it's a good religion, you know. But the person who follows, has that for their religion or their belief, wants to know. You still want to know. If you don't know, then the belief hasn't completed itself, hasn't resolved itself in knowledge. And so you are still a seeker. Right? And the problem hasn't been solved. So the problem has to be solved. How is it going to be solved? Through knowledge. It can't, because the problem is ignorance. There's no real problem here. There is a real problem in this, only in this sense. If you believe that you have been bitten by a cobra, you have a problem. Whether you've been bitten or not is a non-issue. As long as you believe you've been bitten by the cobra, you're experiencing that reality. That's your reality. If you see the scary man, is really just a post. Until you see the post, it's a scary man. You know, in the dark, a boogeyman. What are we going to do? So the whole emotional reality that you're living is based upon, you know, the vikshepa, the projection that's caused by the ignorance. And you can't make that go away, you know, without having knowledge of the post or knowledge of the rope. Like when Swamiji tells the rope snake story, he'll have his friend, the guy thinks he's been bitten by a cobra, and his friend goes and tries to reason with him that you haven't been bitten by a cobra. It was really only a snake there. It was really only a rope there. You really haven't been bitten. It was only a rope. I promise you, it was only a rope. I saw the rope myself. The boy says, I saw a snake. I felt it bite me. I saw it with my own eyes. I felt it, you know. And so his friend, the talking and the cajoling doesn't help him. It might give some relief, but he was certain about what he saw and what he felt. And so what has to happen is that his friend has to slowly drag him back over to look at the rope, and even that might not be enough. He has to look at the rope, and then the boy has to point out, how many bends did your snake have? You know, how many bends did your snake have? Where were the fangs? Were that sticking out right there? See what I mean? He has to make the boys see, without doubt, that, oh my God, that, I had mistaken that rope for a snake. It's a rope. He has to know it. He has to see it. It's not, can't be a belief. The belief can help. It can give a doubt in his mind, oh, maybe it was only a rope, even though I did see the snake. He has to see it. It's the same here. You have to recognize yourself. You have to actually recognize, see it. Not just believe it, you have to see it. That's the aparocha jnana. And that is why so much teaching is involved, because you have to see it from every direction, because the pramana will unfold it in one way, the means of knowledge will unfold it in one way, and you'll see it, but then your mind will go, yeah, but what about this? Then the pramana has to, move over to that and shine the light on that particular doubt. And then the ego, the one who is clinging to this, being this body, mind, sense organs, it'll jump over here and say, what about this? And the pramana has to then shine on that until at some point the ego just goes, oh, okay. I see. And that's the tripti, where the ego finally no longer has any area of doubt. It sees thoroughly. It's not about belief. Where all of your beliefs have been satisfied. Let me tell you the reason that it's not about belief. When we use the word belief, we're talking about something that is away from us. Like, I believe that to be true. I believe there's a heaven. Even in the Vedas, it's the same. I believe there's a heaven. I believe that the soul survives after death. I have paroksha jnanam of that because I have shraddha. I have belief in the shastra or the scripture. And because it says that and it seems like it should be that to me, I believe it and I firmly believe that. That the soul survives after death, there is a heaven. I believe in the reincarnation because it makes sense in so many ways. So I believe that. And I can have firm faith and firm belief in that. And I believe in the structure of the Vedas and the rituals and all. I believe all of that. But now you say, and I believe that I am... I believe I am like this. The I, the self, and this creation that you experience is not away from you. Right? So somebody can tell you that it's like this, but you actually have to have, to know it, this is available for direct, immediate knowledge. It's not about belief. It can start out with somebody saying, the Vedas say this and that, and you can say, well, that sounds good, I'd like to study that. But in terms of knowledge, you're not going to have a belief about your own nature. Your own nature is here to be known. And that's why the aparoksha jnanam is an option here. Aparoksha jnanam, the direct immediate knowledge, is not an option for heaven. Or that there's different planes of existence, or that the soul transmigrates. That's paroksha jnanam. Aparoksha jnanam, direct immediate knowledge, is for you, because yourself is already, your being is already aparoksha. Your being is already self-evident, the aparoksha part, but already, even for an ajnani, I am, I exist, I'm a conscious being. I am an existent conscious being. That is self-evident knowledge. That is your self-evident experience. No one can take that away from you, You can never say that I'm not conscious or that I don't exist. That is your swarupa. It's your very nature. But okay, so as long as you're here, with the mind, you can't say, oh no, I'm an unconscious being or I'm a non-existent being. And we're not using the language properly. Right? So you say, I'm an existent conscious being. That is self-evident. You can't experience yourself any more than it is already being experienced right now. You can't, what are you going to do? Create a little more consciousness, a little bit more awareness? You can have your mind, you know, gain more knowledge of this and that. You can have your mind go into different states of experience. That's true. But the conscious me that illumines that mind, whatever the state of experience, whatever the perception, whatever the mood, that conscious being cannot become more of a conscious being than it is. It is invariable. Right? It's not an object of your awareness. It's the very being because of which all things are lit up. And so because it's not an object, it's not one of the things in the creation, you can't do anything to change it. And that, in fact, is the greatest moksha, because when a person because this very swarupa, that swarupa means nature, the very nature of your being is whole and complete. It is what you're seeking for, actually. And so that changelessness of that being, right, is not something that can be more experienced than it is right now. However, right now, for the Ajnani, for the one who doesn't have self-knowledge, this me is totally superimposed, right, upon your mind and body and sense organs, so that the me and the thoughts are taken to be one. The me and the body are taken to be one. So the experiences of the body and the experience of me are lumped together. There's no viveka, there's no discrimination. The experience of the emotions and the experience of me, lumped together, no discrimination. Until it's pointed out. Until it's pointed out that, wait a minute, you're aware of your body. You're aware of your thoughts. You're aware of your emotions. Your emotions come and go, you don't. That's discrimination. It's just simply pointed out and then you go, oh my gosh. Yeah? But you're not discovering a new self. So this discrimination, this teaching methodology has to painstakingly make you see what is already here to be seen. Right? And if you think about it with the tenth man story, the tenth man, when he discovers, I am the tenth man, what kind of a discovery is that? It's not a new experience, is it? Because the tenth man is already fully here. The experience is already fully here. But it's just not recognized for what it is. So your being is already fully here. It just hasn't been differentiated and recognized for what it is. Once it's recognized, right, then the whole rest of the world falls into place. This body, mind, sense organs as being part of the world, part of Ishvara, all fall into place because yourself is not an object. And so there's a whole lot of teaching that has to go on, you know, to make that new relationship clear. So you understand this. For the Ajnani, there is a relationship between you and the world and God. For the Ajnani, for the one who doesn't have self-knowledge. What is that relationship? I am this limited being, this conscious limited being, living in this world, inert world. I'm a conscious being walking around in an inert world, and along with you other conscious beings, we're walking around in an inert world. And God is up there somewhere. So there's God. If there is a God, and some people will even say, I don't think there is a God. So if there's no God, then there's just this inert world and I'm a conscious bubble walking along in it. Okay? That's it for, then that's the relationship. So let's say there is a God. God, world, individual. I am an individual related to this world and related to God. And so I have faith in God, belief in God. I follow Dharma. I follow values. So I'm an individual related to this world, related to God. Now, that's an Ajnani, and you have lifetimes and lifetimes of lifetimes of that. And it goes along with what everybody else believes. So you have a lot of company to validate that position, right? Yeah. In fact, in the Upanishads, in the Katha Upanishad, they use one example of, the blind leading the blind. Everybody's blind, right? And there's one blind man who's more adept at, more capable than the other blind people. So the blind, you're leading the blind, no problem. They don't even know about sight, so it doesn't have anything to do with it. So that's an interesting example they use in the Upanishad. Now, but what that's a little slightly tangential. The point here is, as an Ajnani, you are related in this world. You're related to others and you're related to God. And that relationship has been substantiated by lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes. Now, when you recognize the nature of yourself as non-objectifiable and changeless, in fact, this body, mind, sense, or organs belongs to this world, then now you need to know, well, what is my relationship then? This self, changeless, conscious being, wholeness, Satchitananda, this changeless being, what is its relationship to now this body, this world, and God? You see? You have to know that. You have to understand. It's not enough just to make you see, oh, this beautiful self inside is changeless. It's always there. It's never changing. It's the constant. But now, what is the relationship of me, which is this, which is obviously me, to this body, to this mind, to this world? What is God? Is there a God? What is the relationship then to this changeless Atma, all of this experience? That all has to be made clear. And so that's why with the Upanishads, that there's such a thorough teaching methodology, because it's not just taking you to the recognition of yourself, it's also making you recognize yourself in relationship to your experience, because you still have a body, mind, sense organs, and you're still walking around, and you're still related, to everything in this world. So now you're going to be understanding it differently, because the ahankara, the I notion that was so stuck here on the body, mind, sense organs, has been changed. The location of the I changes. Now the I is landing on me, the silent, changeless me. And if that is so, what is this creation? What is this creation to me then? Who am I in reference to this creation? So all of that teaching has to take place. Very, very, very thorough. So now, in this verse, that was all what we call an upodgatha, a little introduction to this big argument that we're going to be going into. And what he says is interesting. If we take the ajnanam, because ajnanam avritihi cha, the ajnanam and the avriti, means the ignorance and the covering, if you take these two, right, both of them are vikshepa prak. They're before the vikshepa. In other words, without the ajnana and the covering, the snake wouldn't come. Without the ajnana and the avriti, right, there would be no vikshepa. There'd be no projection, right? There'd be no one saying, I am this jiva. That all comes later. There'd be nobody saying, I am the samsari. I am this individual here. Without the ajnanam and the vikshepa, without the ajnanam and the avriti. So the vikshepa comes third. The ajnanam and avriti are first in order. You see how that would be? Like if you say, I am a samsari, I am this individual being here, in order for you to say that, you have to already have the ignorance and the avriti, the ignorance and the covering, or you can't say it. So he says, the ajnanam and the avriti, these two Prasiddhikaha, it is very well known, it's obvious, that they have to come before the vikshepa, the projection. Yadyapi, even though that is so, he says, atta api, still, avasthete, both of these, ajnana and avritti, belong to the vikshepa, vikshepasya. They belong to the vikshepa. They belong to the projection. They don't belong to the atma. He says, na atmanaha. You see, so he's presenting this as something that you might be thinking of as a problem. Where does the ajnanam and the avritti of the jiva, the chittabhasa, the reflected consciousness, that is a product, see, the reflected consciousness, this jiva, is a product of ajnanam and vikshepa. If that is true, if I'm the result of the ajnana and the avritti, if I'm the result of that, then where does the ajnana and the avritti abide? Where does it belong? How can you say that it belongs to me? Because it's produced me, right? So it should belong to the Atma. Then the Atma itself should have this ignorance and this covering. And in this verse it says, no. No, it doesn't belong. Even though the ajnana and the avritti, right, are first, and the vikshepa is a product of that, nevertheless, still, it doesn't belong to the self. It belongs to the chittabhasa. It belongs to the vikshepa. And so now he has to explain how that could be true. And the problem would be this. You see, if ajnana and avritti belong to the atma, then the atma would have ignorance. Right? The atma itself would be ignorant. But the atma has no ignorance. There is nothing in sasanga. The Atma is completely unattached. It's just pure consciousness. From the standpoint of the Atma, there's no ignorance at all. Right? So it can't have ignorance. We'll see later, it'll be from the standpoint of the Maya Upadhi. But you can't say if ignorance is the nature of the Atma, that's a problem. Right? Then the Atma is ignorant. The Atma isn't ignorant. The Atma is consciousness. It's pure consciousness. It's always exactly the same. So then you have to say that this ignorance and avritti, then they belong to the chittabhasa, but they came from the chittabhasa. They came from the jiva. See? They came before the jiva. The jiva came from it. And yet the jiva is suffering from the ignorance. So where are you going to place this ignorance? It says, you can't place it in the atma, because the atma is a sangha. So let's look at this next verse that explains it.
Vikshepot patita purvam apivikshepa samskritihi astyeva tadavastatvam aviruddham tatastayoho Vikshepa utpatitaha purvam api vikshepa samskritihi asti eva tad avastatvam aviruddham tataha tayoho.
He says, even though being before the birth of the vikshepa, vikshepa utpatitaha purvam, even though before purvam, the rise, the birth of the vikshepa, of the projection, vikshepa samskritihi asti, there is the samskara of the vikshepa. The samskara of the vikshepa is there even before the rise of the vikshepa. Tadavastatvam aviruddham tata tayoho. He says, therefore, the chidabhasa, the tadavastatvam, the chidabhasa being the locus of these two is reasonable. So let me explain. Aviruddham, reasonable, means not contradictory. This is the thing. Vidyaranya has created kind of an argument that we have to work with here. But I know what he's doing. I know where he's going with this. So let me give a little background here. Is there a beginning for the jiva? Is there a first birth for the jiva? Like you. Say this reincarnation. Birth after birth after birth after birth after birth. When was the first birth? Was there a first birth? That's like saying, was there a, if we look at the whole creation as being cyclical, that there's pure awareness that is not changing at all, and then there's the Maya Upadi, where the creation projects, resolves, projects, resolves, projects, resolves. When was the first projection of the creation? Beginningless. Yeah, because when would it start? The self didn't start. Consciousness never started. Consciousness has no arms and legs and hands to create Maya. So Maya itself is uncreated. Consciousness has no beginning. Maya itself, which is responsible for this projection of the creation, when did it begin? Has no beginning. When did the jiva begin? The jivas, which are part of the Maya projection, when did they begin? No beginning. When did you begin? No beginning. Right? So that means birth after birth after birth after birth. What caused you to take this birth? This birth? Samskaras. What is samskaras? Your previous tendencies. Right? The tendencies, the tendencies or previous karmas now cause you to take this particular birth. But what caused you to take that birth that caused you to take this birth? Samskaras. Right? And so samskara means that tendency or the impression. Right? That impression, the impression of the chidabhasa, is there in the ajnanam. Right? So because that samskara is there, because the ajnanam or the maya upadi is beginningless, the jivas are beginningless, and so that since there's no beginning to the jiva, the impression, the samskara, is always there. There's always going to be a previous samskara. Say you take this birth right now. Does it have a previous samskara or not? Is there a cause for you to take this birth? We say that's the samskaras that caused you to take this particular birth. Where is the first samskara? There is no first samskara. What started the process? Nothing started the process. The process is beginningless. And so we say that samskara that for the vikshepa is already there in the ajnanam. Okay, now, to go back for a minute, I'm using the word ajnanam. Instead of using the word ajnanam now for a minute, I'm going to use the word maya. When we say pure awareness, awareness has this maya. When we say it has maya, what do we mean? We have no other place to put maya. Right? Because if there's awareness, which is just limitless, changeless, one without a second, there's no borders to it. You can't get to the end of awareness. If there's no second thing there, there's just pure being. There's not a right side of being or a left side of being or a top or a bottom. There's just pure being, which is what? Pure me. Just the me. And you say me when you just go to your own essence. That me, get rid of the whole creation, all duality. What is there is just that me. Now there's maya, which makes the pot of the clay. I say when I make the pot of the clay, means the pot has no being apart from the clay. Maya has no substance apart from the self. That's what maya is. This entire creation, we say, is a projection of maya because There's nothing in this creation that has any being of its own. Every single thing in this creation, if you were to analyze it, is infinitely divisible. You can never find a thing here. Everything in this creation comes into being and goes out of being. So you can't find anything here except being. Being itself is here, right? And the more you dissect the creation, the more you, what do you find? Well, more being, more being, more being. But the names and forms fall away. The more you analyze this creation, the names and forms fall away, and what is left is the self. The self is left. The Atma is left. So now, where are you going to place this Maya that has no being of its own? There's no place else to place it because all that is the self, is the self. And so this Maya, all that is here is the self. And so there's no other place to place Maya. But then even if you say place Maya, does it belong to the self? No. Does it not belong to the self? No. It neither belongs to the self nor not belongs to the self. Okay? Because it has no substance other than the self. And what does this Maya do? It projects the creation. And what is there when it projects the creation? Is the self. Plus this display that we call the creation, which has nothing for its substance other than the self. And what is the content of this creation that's cyclically projected from beginningless time? This is the content. The creation that you experience. We get to experience a little dab of it here. The slightest little dab of the creation we're experiencing here. And what is filled with this creation? All of these jivas fill this creation. Okay. Now, are these jivas, when the creation projects, part of the creation or not? They're part of the creation because what do? Come in from the outside? If they don't come in from the outside, so all of the jivas are part of the creation. They're part of the projection. That's the samskara. See, the jiva itself is a samskara. It's a part of the creation itself that projects. Okay, so now, the jiva projects from the standpoint of Ishwara, or Brahman, the Lord, or just consciousness with Maya, we call Ishwara. From the standpoint of Ishwara, there is no ajnanam. There's only the vikshepa. Right? There's only the projection of the creation. That's all. From the standpoint of Ishwara, Maya projects. There's Vikshepa. But now from the standpoint of the Jiva, right, there's Ajnanam. That Vikshepa itself creates the Ajnanam. Because the Jiva has limited sense organs, limited mind, limited experience, and it identifies with it. As we'll see in the next verses, the Jiva is the one that says, I don't know. I am ignorant. The jiva is the one that experiences the avritti, that one that can say, what self? There is no self. Who says it? Brahman doesn't say it. The Atma doesn't say it. Think like this. You have a dream. We'll dream the meadow again. You have a dream of the meadow. From your standpoint, there's just the vikshepa. Of the whole creation, the entire creation is a projection. It's a vikshepa, right? But then within this whole projection, there are jivas, individuals running around. And one jiva says, self? First of all, it's running around just in pure ajnana, just enjoying itself in the meadow, that's all. Then somebody comes and says, do you think that there's an infinite self? What are you talking about? What infinite self? I've never heard of such a thing. There's no infinite self. And if there is, I certainly don't know what it is. That's the jiva in that vikshepa. So from that jiva standpoint, there's just, I am ignorant. I don't know of such a self. Right? I don't really know who I am, in fact. Unless I'm just this, I don't know who I am. And if there is a limitless self, I don't know what that is. That's the ajnanam, that the jiva, the chirabhasa, that the vikshepa within this creation is suffering from. Now, from the standpoint of view, the one who's projected the metta and all of the beings in it, is there any ajnanam? Is there any identification with anything in particular? Right? So for you, there's not ajnanam, there's the vikshepa. But for the jiva, there's identification, right, with the ajnanam, because the projection of this particular body, mind, sense organs creates that situation. It's beginningless. There's no time. Just think about it. Until once that jiva gains knowledge, that individual gains knowledge, then that one knows, I am the conscious being. That it's limitless, changeless. The one that illumines my mind, and in fact illumines the mind of all beings. I am the self that illumines the whole. That jiva recognizes that. I am the whole. But until recognizing that, it's going to be experiencing the limitations of the upadi. Upadi means the body, the mind, sense organs. That's what it experiences, and that's all it knows. Right? And so that jiva has to be given knowledge to recognize that this self, that is me, to see it. In fact, it is because your self is changeless and self-evident here, the mind itself has to see, like, I'm always thinking and whatnot, but the me, the I, is always the same. So now it's relabeling. Right? It's doing a relabeling job. It's relabeling, recognizing and relabeling the stability of myself, and then recognizing now the relationship of the self to the whole meadow. The jiva inside the meadow is recognizing the relationship of itself to the body, mind, sense organs of this character in the meadow, and to the whole. So that I know then I am you and you and you, and this is all me. But this is all me, not from the standpoint of the little jiva within, right? This is all me from the standpoint of me that includes the individuals within and the whole picture. So, here he says, if you see, understand that this vikshepa, that this projection and the vikshepa of this individual has samskaras that belong to the creation, really, to the projection of the whole creation, then there's no contradiction here. And he'll go on. We'll do it next week. He goes on now to talk about what I've just unfolded, that the ajnanam is not going to be coming from the self or from Ishvara. The ajnanam comes from the jiva who says, I am ignorant. That's why we give that ajnanam to the jiva. And we give the avritti to the jiva, even though it's the ajnanam and the avritti that has caused the jiva. Right? There wouldn't be no jiva, because there is no jiva. Right? There's only the self. That's all there is. There's no jiva, really. There's just one self that projects this whole infinite creation. That's the truth of it. But within that projection, the jiva is the one that says, I don't have a clue what's going on. Right? And so the ajnanam and the avritti belong to the jiva, even though the ajnanam is responsible for the projection of the jiva. So that's his argument. And it'll go on for some time, a little more detail. Let's stop it here. I'll just take a moment.
Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
Why is he having this doubt? It seems kind of abstract to me. Mm.
Because it's a doubt to be had.
Yeah, it's a, if you start thinking about it, you don't have the doubt. But if you started thinking about, well, Avarna and Vikshepa, they do create Avarna, the Ajnanam and Avarna, they do create the Vikshepa. Then if they create the Vikshepa, then the Atma must have ignorance.
Hmm.
Or ignorance. And the Atma can't have ignorance because it's a Sangha and it's not attached to anything, so there's no ignorance there. And so then you start not understanding. Well, that doesn't make any sense. That must not be true. So you have to... You know, and what you find, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of Shastra, the Bhashas, will present many, many, many doubts. They'll create a doubt. Because you might have that doubt. And then satsang is for that also. If the Shastra doesn't take care of it, then the satsang is there for you to quest, to give your doubt. What about this or what about that? I don't quite see it. You know, that's all part of the manana, you know, so that you can gain that clarity.
Okay, also, like, the creation comes into being without, like, ignorance. On the
yes.
Part of, like,
Ishvara.
Ishvara.
Because think of it like this. There's pure awareness, which is not have any ignorance, it's just awareness. Mm-hmm. And there's the Maya Upadi, this projecting, sattva, rajas, and tamas projects.
Mm-hmm.
Ishvara has no identification with any part in that. So that's what we mean by asanga. It's not identified with this or that, like you're identified with your body, you know, I'm identified with mine. It has no identification. And it is, the Maya is a projection of absolute total knowledge. That's what it is. If you say, what is this projection? It's manifest knowledge. And then unmanifest, manifest, unmanifest, manifest.
And what's Ishvara's role in that? I mean,
there is no role. Because there is no role, because there's no beginning. It's a matter of what is. So now if you say, you just look at Ishvara from the standpoint of pure consciousness, then there's just me. Which, one without a second, just me. But if we look at it with this Maya that projects as the creation, then there's this me, limitless me, limitless self, with limitless manifest knowledge. That means, if you look at this, just imagine this entire creation that we can look at, all the stars and whatnot, the entire limitless creation as an infinite projection. And now instead of saying projection, replace it, because just to make it more clear, what do we mean, what is the projection? What is the projection? It is manifest knowledge. And that goes into unmanifest condition that we call avyakta, manifest, you know, and back and forth like that. Okay, so now, why do we call it Ishvara? Well, because it's a conscious being. If you say, why do I say I am a jiva? I am a conscious being, because I'm a conscious being. I'm not inert. So why do we say that this is Ishvara? Because conscious being, it has a self, right? And so it's not that it's a self with arms and legs, but yourself doesn't have arms and legs. Yourself is just pure consciousness. And from the standpoint of this body, mind, sense organs, this body, mind, sense organs identifies yourself as being of this shape. But in fact, yourself is not of this shape. Yourself has no shape. It's limitless consciousness. Right? Now from the standpoint of Ishvara, there is no identification with an object within the creation. There is just his manifest knowledge. His, her, there's no gender there. His manifest knowledge.
So manifestation is not like Vikshepa.
If we say, if we say projection is vikshepa, manifest knowledge is vikshepa. From the standpoint of, and now that, if I'm using vikshepa in that way, then if I'm using it like this. We say that ajnanam has two aspects, avarna, vikshepa. Avarna covers, vikshepa projects. The jiva suffers from the avarna and the vikshepa. From Ishwara's standpoint, there's only vikshepa, which is the projection, the manifestation, the manifest knowledge. But within that manifest knowledge, which is this whole creation, there's duality. Right? So all of these jivas that have limited capacity, limited sense organs, limited mind, limited experience, all taking place with one limitless self. But when we say limitless self, limitless doesn't mean size. It means one without a second. When we think of limitless, we think, oh, it's limitless in quality or limitless in quantity or limitless in spatially limitless. That's not the meaning of limitless. Limitless means pure consciousness, one without a second. It means there is nothing here but that consciousness. So just like if you say, myself, the self, say in reference to your imagination, yourself is limitless. You have an imagination of the meadow or of a universe. Yourself has not become the universe. It doesn't lose its being. But wherever that universe imagination is, the self is. Right? There, from the standpoint of the self, there's no time, there's no space. There's just the conscious me, you know. But this conscious me, because of Maya, the Maya can project a limitless universe. And wherever that limitless universe is, consciousness is. Existence, the conscious existence of the self is. Just like, that's why it's so useful to use your own imagination. You have an imagination, wherever that whatever's in that imagination, wherever it is, the conscious existence being, which is yourself, is. Yourself doesn't change in size, it doesn't become big or small, because space and time belong to the manifestation, not to the self. So space and time, space and time itself has me for its being. Okay? But there's no space and time for me. The space and time belongs to the manifestation of knowledge or projection of the world. Now within that projection, here are all of us. Now, all of us have limited mind, limited sense organs, and so what is just part of Ishwara's vikshepa, from our standpoint, there's ajnanam with the avarana. Right? There's covering. Not for Ishwara. Because there's no limitation in the upadhi.
So is this open to immediate recognition, or is it the kind of a belief? Or
the understanding of Ishwara is more paroksha jnanam. Mm-hmm. But the paroksha jnanam is substantiated by the aparoksha jnanam. Because the aparoksha jnanam is true for not only your being, but the experience of duality. The mityatva, the apparent nature, the dependent nature of this duality on consciousness is aparoksha jnanam. The satya mitya, the truth or the existence of your being, the changeless existence of your being, is aparoksha. Mm-hmm. The mityatva, the dependent nature of all that you experience in this creation, is aparoksha, because it's right here, and you can see it. What you can't experience from the standpoint of this limited upadhi, this limited body, mind, sense organs, is the Ishwara Swarupa, the form of Ishwara, which is limitless. You can do an infinite logical extension to appreciate the truth of it, but to have a vision of the whole virat, the whole creation, that is the Ishwara's vision now.
Well, then how do we approach this concept of the Vishwara, or how do we deal with it?
Because when you understand the truth of this, your experience here, you understand this aparokshajnanam of your being, aparokshajnanam of your being the one self of this, just this room is enough. If you can have aparokshajnanam of the reality of this room, then you can extend it to all duality. Because yourself, if you recognize yourself, it's free from time. So the self is changeless and free from time and non-objectifiable. So it is whole and complete. It's not a partial knowledge of yourself. It's a full knowledge of yourself because there aren't any parts. And there's no space. There's no time. It's just you. And that's what it is. So you can have direct, immediate, full, complete, whole recognition, which you can never have of anything in Maya. You can never know anything in Maya. Because everything in Maya, you can look at it from an infinite number of standpoints, infinite number of relationships, and you can divide it infinitely into smaller and smaller parts, so you can never get to the bottom of it. In terms of something here. But what you can understand is that there is nothing here but consciousness. You can get to it in that way. Mm-hmm. But trying to really learn about something here, it'd be very, very frustrating. But you gain practical knowledge. But if you were to go into anything to really find out what is here, then you would always be hitting a dead end because there's no end to the divisions and the relationships. But in terms of understanding the mityatva of it, that you can see fully. Now, if you can see that fully, then this here is nothing but consciousness in truth. Okay? So now say, if this is nothing but consciousness in truth, and I recognize that, then the whole universe is nothing but consciousness. Because the whole universe exists within time and space and duality. And that isn't going to change. You're not going to call it a universe if there's no time, space, duality. It's not a universe. It's just it's consciousness then.
Is Ishvara, so Ishvara is the manifest knowledge of the creation?
It's Brahman.
Right.
With the Maya Upadhi.
Right.
You can call the Maya Upadhi manifest knowledge.
Okay.
You, first
so
we'll say
does it give this creation the order, the intelligence, like everything we see, though, has some order, and that just, we break everything.
Everything is order,
yeah.
The infinite order. Swamiji uses that term. He loves these two terms now. He really likes for trying to make a person understand the nature of Ishvara. The infinite order of the creation. Because we go on discovering the order, right? Mm-hmm. That's what a science is all about. We continue to discover this order. So the infinite order of the creation is Ishvara. And what is this Maya? It's manifest knowledge. How to understand Maya, what it is. Think of manifest knowledge. Maya says manifest knowledge because you yourself, as a jiva, have a limited experience of manifest knowledge. Like if I ask you right now to think of your house, then you weren't thinking of it before, probably. Think of your house, driving up to your house and what it looks like. That was unmanifest. I ask you to think of it, it becomes manifest. Right? And being manifest, if the house is there, in your mind, that the house is there, and it is known. The house is there and it is known. The house comes from you, is sustained by you, resolves into you. Like that, the creation comes from the self, is sustained by the self, resolves into the self. He says, manifest knowledge, because when the creation is there, it is known. Because, to go a little bit more deeply into it, the knownness that manifest knowledge enjoys is the self. If I get rid of the entire manifest knowledge, all duality, The self is there. What is the self? It is self-evident. It is itself. The self itself is known without any other thing, without any other means of knowledge, without a mind, without the self itself, consciousness itself is known. Okay? Now, the Maya manifests the vision of the universe, the manifest knowledge. It's manifest knowledge, but where does the knownness of the manifest knowledge lie? That is the very swarupa of the self. So the manifest knowledge is there, that manifest knowledge is known, but the knownness really belongs to consciousness.
It was a tough time imagining manifestation that doesn't cover something over, though, in that sense that they use.
There is nothing covered over. From the standpoint of the one for whom the manifest knowledge is there. So you have to think of now, Ishvara, or the Atma, is the self is not a knower, right? Consciousness itself is just consciousness. The knower requires having a mind or sense organs or infinite mind, and that becomes known. Consciousness is not performing an act of knowing. But so now, consciousness, which is knownness itself, because it's self-evident consciousness, has this Maya. This Maya manifests as the creation. In this manifest knowledge, all of which is known from the standpoint of the creation in total, includes many parts. Some of those parts are jivas that have minds. The minds are each limited. And so from the standpoint of the manifest knowledge for Ishvara, all of the jivas are known, all of the minds are known, all of the objects are known, the whole infinite picture with all of its parts are known. It's called Sarvajñaha and Sarvavit. Sarvajñaha means the whole, this is my conscious projection, not with words, but with reality. The conscious projection of manifest knowledge and Sarvavit, all of the parts. It's infinite knowledge. The whole of it shines, is known. But now, from the standpoint of each one of the parts, say now we look at each one of the jivas, the individuals, right? The jiva is limited by its own limitation. It has a limited body that enjoys the consciousness of the manifestation. It has a mind that enjoys the consciousness, which is the truth of the manifestation. Sense organs. But now this mind that is thinking and looking around, how is it supposed to know that the consciousness, which is its truth, is the substance of the whole creation? Instead, the mind says, oh, I'm a conscious being. So that's, right, that's the ajnanam. Right? The ajnanam is built in. The ignorance is built in. It's like the other side of the vikshepa. From Ishwara's side. Ishwara's side, there's no ajnanam. From the jiva side, because of the limitation of the body, mind, sense organs, right? There's a not knowing. There's a taking to be itself. I am it. Because no viveka, no discrimination is there. And so, this viveka jnanam, knowledge is viveka jnanam. This discriminative knowledge has to take place, you know. And then, in spite of walking around in this creation with mind and sense organs, while that is taking place, also the aparoksha, the self-evident nature of your being, which is not walking around at all, is self-evident, shining.
Yeah, when you talk that way, I can really recognize what you're saying. But when it seems like when you start to talk about Ishvara, it's more kind of a truth that's being told as it is, but I don't get a recognition out of it.
The recognition is different. The aparoksha, the immediate recognition is going to be with the satyam mitya that's going on in this room right now.
Mm-hmm.
But when you understand the order of all of this, and you can do logical extension, like if something, you know what I mean by logical extension? If it is true here, it's true everywhere.
Okay.
If the self is non-objectifiable, it's non-objectifiable, period. If an object exists within duality, and being existing within duality and subject to change, that means it's infinitely divisible. You can't find a substance here. So what we can show to be true here
mm-hmm.
is true. You can logically extend it.
Yeah.
Now, to recognize Ishvara as means that this whole creation is consciousness, is conscious of itself. That the whole creation, as manifest knowledge, reflects itself. So it is known, the whole creation is known. That's where the Shruti comes in. You can't come up with that yourself.
Okay.
But what once it's unfolded,
mm-hmm.
in light of who you are mm-hmm. and how you, your relationship to the world, then you can see, yeah, I see how that would have to be true.
Okay.
But that's not going to be your experience.
Okay.
Whereas the self is your experience.
Mm-hmm.
It is you. The Nityatva of the creation is your experience. You know, there's, it's here to be seen. There's nothing you can do about it. As it's shown to you, your mind can't say, oh no, that's not true. Because it is true. So you have a direct, immediate knowledge of that. So then you understand, yeah, there is nothing here but consciousness. Now when you understand that, there is nothing here but consciousness.
Okay.
Okay. Then as the Shruti starts to reveal the nature of Ishvara and the order of things, then your mind says, oh, I see. That must be true.
Okay.
But it's different than the direct. It's
yeah.
still paroksha.
Yeah, okay. Then we're going to go on with this then.
Yes.
How long have we been
going? A long time.
Yeah.
But it gets better.
So, once everything is recognized as consciousness, it seems to me that there's still I don't know, like value or purpose or usefulness or something like that in being able to distinguish, like, oh, this whole room is consciousness, but there is a lamp and there is Carol and there is Rennie and there's everybody.
Yeah, you know,
separate forms.
That's right. But the thing is that you're not seeking unity in the same way, because you've already found it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not seeking, you're not ignorant anymore in terms of who you are and who God is. That's the thing. So there's a resolution. Because every soul is really seeking, we could say, union with God, whether they know it or not. You're seeking completion or wholeness or fulfillment in that way. And this gives you that fulfillment. Now you have that fulfillment, and at the same time, you get to be a jiva in the world, experiencing it, and doing your dharma, and living out your prarabdha. That's why the Vedas, you know, the Upanishads get into a lot of detail about what is dharma, what is dharma, what is adharma, what is the prarabdha karma, the karmas that caused you to take this birth, so that you understand all of that, so that you can fully engage in this life that you've been given, which is something sacred. I mean, if you see all of this as Ishvara, then every life is sacred, and your life is sacred. You know, and your life is as much a part of Ishvara as Ishvara's life, actually. You know, we're all part of Ishvara's play, or whatever you want to say, Ishvara's life, whatever it is. We're very much part of that. And so you engage in this world. And you do your best. Swamiji says, you know, I do my best every day with what's given, with what's before me.
Mm-hmm.
I do the best that I can. I help as much as I can. I care as much as I can. I help others as much as I can with whatever the situation may be. That's what I do, day after day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what my life today, and this is my life today, and this is my today, and I do the best.
But
that
it's
I can.
Not a competitive. I do my best.
No, it's not competitive. It's not. I do my best in reference to anybody else, or even in reference to yourself.
Yeah.
In terms of competition, so I just do the best I can. That's all. I love that. It's so beautiful. so simple, you know, and real.
Yeah, you get a relief.